President Trump leaves the Philippines tomorrow after meeting with world leaders at the ASEAN summit over the weekend. Today, Trump met with Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte and did not publicly criticize him for his war on drugs. Human rights groups have accused Duterte of sanctioning thousands of extrajudicial killings. For a deeper look at the Philippines, we're joined now by Sheila Coronel, a professor at the Columbia Journalism School. Professor Coronel, you've reported in the Philippines for decades. How big a departure is Duterte for the country's leadership?
Well, Duterte represents both something old and something new for the Philippines. He comes from a political family. His father was governor of Davao in Mindanao, but he is also the first president to come from Mindanao. So that's new.
Why is that significant?
That's significant because Mindanao is sort of the periphery. People from Mindanao have always complained about what they call Manila colonialism. They feel Manila is an imperial power, just as I suppose any other far-flung province of a country would feel that they do not have the attention. They don't get a fair share of the nation's resources or the attention of the national government. They also feel marginalized and they don't have a voice. And so his strongest constituency up to now is really the constituency of the periphery, people who feel have genuine grievances against the Manila elite and who feel they've been excluded and don't have a voice in the way the country is run.
Now, he has become famous around the world in part because of his brutal war on drugs in the Philippines. Give us a sense, first of all, because I know you've done reporting on this, of how that war has affected daily life in the Philippines.
The war is really largely limited to Metro Manila and some of the big cities in the country. If you are a poor Filipino living in a slum of Manila, you know, Manila has a population of about 11 million people. It's a large, sprawling city. Then you feel really nervous. You feel insecure. You feel that you may be targeted whether or not you are a drug user. You feel uncertainty. You feel like you're the target of the police. But if you live in a middle-class neighborhood or if you live outside of the big cities where drug dealing is rampant, then you're completely inured from it. You don't hear about it unless you watch television news or read the newspapers. So the drug war has claimed several thousand lives. The police say 3,500 people have been killed in what they call legitimate police operations, and that thousands more have been killed by so-called vigilantes, or these are killings by masked men in the dead of night. The police claim they have no knowledge of it, but certainly the body toll, the body count, however you look at it, it's several thousand, maybe up to 12,000 if you believe human rights groups, in the past 15 months. Hmm. That's a lot of dead bodies. The police say there have been no extrajudicial killings in the Philippines. They say these people who've been killed by the police at night have mainly fought back. But the reality is that very few policemen have been killed. There's very few policemen who've been wounded. Hmm. And so it's a very one-sided fight. It's really a war against the poorest and most vulnerable sectors of the population.
In a televised address last month, Duterte ordered the Philippine police to end the war on drugs, but he also said that he hoped the decision would satisfy the bleeding hearts. Have things changed at all since that announcement was made?
There have been fewer police operations, but I know that there have been a number of people killed. Despite, you know, the day after or the week after that announcement, the pace of the killings has stopped, but it has not ended completely. The killings have not stopped completely.
The drug war is an important issue, but it's just one issue in the Philippines right now. What is the Philippines' relationship like with China?
Well, the Philippine relations with China have generally been, you know, since we opened diplomatic relations in the 70s, the Philippines has had, you know, fairly good relations with China, opening up trade and investments to the Chinese. The South China Sea continues to be an irritant in that relationship. President Aquino, who was president before Duterte was elected, took a hard line against the Chinese. He was sort of an exception in that sense, because he really brought it to confrontation and got a tribunal in The Hague to rule on whether Chinese claims on the islands in the South China Sea were legitimate. The tribunal ruled in favor of the Philippines. Duterte has taken a more conciliatory stance and put that ruling on hold. He's also held a China's request. He's also stopped construction on one of the reefs where the Philippines has had a long presence. And so Duterte has pulled back from Aquino. The difference with Duterte is he's taken, let's say, a much more overtly friendly stance towards China and a much more overtly anti-American stance.
And what about Russia? What's his relationship like with Vladimir Putin?
You know, he has a bromance with both Trump and Putin. So he's very friendly towards Putin as well. But, you know, he's also called Xi Jinping, you know, like a brother. So he's in this very, how do you say it, good company of bros who have a hand in the region.
And you say he has a bromance with Trump?
He definitely does. I mean, he said there's warm rapport between him and Trump. Trump congratulated him. There was a leaked transcript of a telephone conversation that President Trump had with Duterte where Trump congratulated him for the incredible progress that Duterte has made in the drug war in the Philippines.
What about the U.S. relationship with the Philippines? As we know, the country was once an American colony. Is that still talked about today? And how much does that still weigh on the Philippines today?
You know, the Philippines has a long history with the United States. I would say it's a love-hate relationship. The Filipinos still remember the Philippine-American War, although not that much. But Filipinos also have very strong ties to the U.S. There are about 4 million Filipinos here in America,
right,
and American movies and American culture. We speak American English. So there are very strong both political ties as well as affective ties and family ties. Duterte has, you know, brought back that element of, you know, dug up, for example, American massacres during the Philippine-American War. He's also castigated the Americans for the hypocrisy towards human rights. All of them very, very legitimate. But, you know, Duterte has also accepted U.S. military assistance for fighting the war in Mindanao. So he's trying to have the best of both worlds. He both criticizes the U.S., but accepts and welcomes U.S. assistance in fighting ISIS in Mindanao, or ISIS-aligned terrorists in Mindanao.
You mentioned the war in Mindanao. Give us a little more details about that. What's going on there?
So there's a Muslim minority in the Philippines. They have been, since the 1970s, been in some sort of war with the Philippine government. In the 1970s, it was really a war for autonomy and independence. It's never been settled. The Muslims in the Philippines, the Mora people, as we call them, have genuine grievances against the Philippine government. It's a battle over land. It's a battle over identity. It's a battle of recognition of the distinctiveness over their history and their culture. There have been several attempts to have peace negotiations with various Moro movements, Moro separatist and nationalist movements. Unfortunately, many of those peace negotiations have failed. So now you have a younger generation of dissatisfied Moros who've seen the failures of those movements and have opted for a more radical approach. I think to say that they are ISIS involved or linked to ISIS is a little bit of an overreach. I think they're inspired by ISIS. They see ISIS as articulating their own resentments against their own government and the global world order. But it's largely a homegrown rebellion with deep regional and also ethnic roots. So what we saw, for example, in Marawi, the takeover of Marawi, the most Islamic city in Mindanao in the Philippines, is stems from regional resentments and historical injustice, but taking on some of the ISIS rhetoric.
That's Sheila Coronel, who is co-founder of the Philippine Center for Investigative Journalism and a professor at the Columbia Journalism School. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.